every year.
Every year we have to put up a new one.
Well, yeah, I sort of say the feeling's mutual, but actually you enjoy being here.
Yes, no, it's good. I mean, it's a good session. I enjoy it too. And welcome to Ryan and Gal for the first time.
Thank you.
All right. Everyone's got a copy of the agenda. Any comments about on the agenda, or is it the agenda?
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
Second.
And the minutes of February the 28th, everyone's got them attached.
Nominated as vice chair or co-chair?
As vice chair.
As vice chair, not co-chair.
Okay.
Chair, vice
that's
chair.
That's what I've
had.
Okay. Which two?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's similar.
Pardon?
It's similar.
Okay.
So any other comments on the minutes? Somebody want to move that they get accepted with that amendment?
Everybody shy today?
Oh. Yes.
Okay, thank you. 2 seconds. Okay. Okay, so Tom and Laura, second. Procedure.
these were the things that we worked on. The last time, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And so I want to have a look through those rules of procedure and see if they've been formed correctly.
Are for review, since, you know, if you read the, they have to be reviewed one meeting prior to the actual acceptance. So the next time you meet, you'll actually be taking a vote. Right.
Okay.
So as long as there's no amendments or revisions, then we'll keep that, and in the next meeting we'll actually have a formal vote.
Okay. Any other questions? Legal counsel discussed. Discussion's been going back and forth for a while. There's an email from Nancy.
Paid based on his hourly rate of being here.
Yep.
And again, that was a misunderstanding on my part, because I assumed it was on the retainer, so it's not on an hourly rate, so...
Understand. So when we go through training sessions, it's just education for us. And I felt personally that we didn't really need legal representation in a training session, because this is education.
Unless he's learning the same education that we are, because we're paying him to do that.
We're paying him to be a part of that. Now, if we're at a meeting and we feel there's a need to have him here to help us during a regular scheduled meeting, and definitely here...
Or do an issue.
Yeah, then that's... I think we need to make that decision to maximize the benefit to pay for the attorney.
Apart from that, Holt's not a... He's not privately engaged in the meetings. He's usually a listener, which is you know, pretty much his role anyway. So I think generally the feeling was that definitely we wanted him at hearings, and that we may want him in attendance at some other meetings. I think
the way it came down, and especially the letter from the email from Nancy that I responded to, and I responded to it saying, if the council doesn't have a problem with being at our training sessions and paying him, then what's the problem? If they have a problem with it, then we need to address it. But if they don't have a problem with it, then they want to pay him, that's fine.
Yeah. I don't agree. That's how it started with me, though, when, who was it?
Well, you know, I think it's...
He's off the council now, I've forgotten him. Who was our representative?
That was the one I got picked up for...
Barry, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He'll forever be remembered.
And then he said he came with a message from the council that...
It was a cost issue.
It was a cost issue.
So we didn't know how he was getting paid. We didn't know if he was on a retainer. We assumed he was just on a retainer. But it was a per hour charge. And it's probably a minimum
number of hours.
And then I guess I don't have a problem with it being at all. But you know.
Well, one of the questions that I have, guys, is this: I'm not knocking anything that from what we're doing tonight. But for example, if we have a training session and it's just going to be with the building inspector. And he may tell us something that may not be quite legal. Or he may say something that he may not have the right to address this board in this condition. Mm-hmm. Then we would need a legal advisor to say, oh, time out, we don't need that. Or you can't hear this from him. Because he's going to be presenting evidence to us in our hearings, and he may be telling us something in training that we're not supposed to hear until it comes to a hearing. I just don't want to see us get into a trick bag if that happened. That won't happen with this gentleman, and it won't happen with anybody else. But people that would come before us to present things in training that may compromise our positions, I think the attorney should be there to stop it if that's going to happen, because I don't know what would.
That's a good point.
But John has a unique role of having two. He has two roles. He's training you, and he's also part of the hearings on the actual.
Yeah, he's training. He's
well,
training.
He represents the town.
Right. So I mean, he's offering. I've read that earlier in one of the things.
Right.
Some issue with conflict there.
And it's possible there could be a conflict there.
Right.
I don't know.
We have to be careful about what he talks to us about.
The last training session didn't have a problem because all he talked about was how a complaint comes before us, how he receives the complaint, how the complaint is,
the process
and so forth, and then it comes to us for hearing. So that had no conflict whatsoever. But if he starts talking to us about laws, procedures, I think we have a problem.
Well, that would be lawyering anyway.
Yes. So I don't know. I mean, I don't care either way.
Maybe just keep it on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I think I'm with Harry here. If the council doesn't have a problem with him being here at our meetings, then I think he should be here at our meetings.
the meeting, there's two different things. We're talking about meetings, we're talking about trainings. The meetings and hearings, definitely. If it's trainings, it really is irrelevant. Does it matter? I mean, I think that was
like with Don.
Don't Mark tell us something that
I might.
What's wrong?
I could.
I think we have a responsibility also to save the town's money. I mean, I'm with the fire department too, and you know we're doing everything we can to save money there.
I think part of the issue also may have been is that we only had like one training session a year when I was the chair, and before I was chair, we only had one training session a year, so it was just one training session. Now we're having more, so there's going to be more capital outlay, and that may be the concern of council. And if it is, then he doesn't need to be here for training, I guess. As long as it's going to be from an outside source like his. But if it's with somebody, I still think if it's going to be
town source,
especially somebody who's going to be testifying before the council or before the board.
Well, let's say this: if it's a town source, we'll have him here just to make sure that it keeps the keeps things in perspective. If it's an outside source for training, then it's an outside source. I mean, it's
and we'll have no influence over the board as to an outcome of a hearing.
Right.
I'm with that.
And I think that would really help the town save the money. We're going to, we talked about this some time ago about having more training. We agreed to do that. We didn't think about the additional cost that was going to go along with it.
No, I agree. I mean, we just got conflicting messages. Just, you know, what Barry said and then what Nancy responded with were totally opposite things. I think what Harry was saying, the kind of you don't want to cut costs in a place where maybe a misunderstanding gets created and that could end up costing a lot of money the road.
I can agree with that. And I think
it's easier to do it right the first time, is what you're trying to say?
I think, yes. It's easier to have enough people around that can make sure that we do it right.
In some cases, they say that the saying is it's easier to ask forgiveness than ask permission, but in this case, it would be better to have permission before you make a mistake.
So, what are we saying?
If it's a talent source like John doing one of our trainings, definitely we would have a whole here. If it's an outside source with no conflict of interest to what we're being told, and we're not getting legal instructions or things like that, then more than likely he will not be in attendance to the sessions.
Yeah, it is.
Do you want to put that in a motion that it'll be a case-by-case basis according to whatever the schedule is or whatever the... If it's a meeting, you want him here?
If it's a hearing,
all hearings, but if it's training, it'll be depending on who's giving the training.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a good way.
Yes.
Okay.
On a case-by-case basis.
So, is that the motion you just made?
That's the motion I just made.
Okay.
And I'll second.
Thanks for clarifying.
Okay. Do you want to comment on that?
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay,
that's the old business right now. Don's been sitting there very patiently waiting for us to do the cut here. But the new business I'll hand over to Don and we'll go from there.
Okay, well thank you, Peter. I've got a handout here. This is a little bit like last year, but not quite the same. And I do enjoy being with you all. I was sharing with Josie. When I came in a little before 7, I'm not sure if this is good or bad, and I couldn't really remember very many details about being here last year. So you did leave a negative impression on me, I guess, but you did leave a positive budget. But anyway, and you can take that any way you want to. Let me do this. First of all, I want to introduce myself to those of you that are new to me anyway. Obviously, my name is Don Egbert. I'm also obviously not a native of North Carolina. I grew up in Indiana. But my mother is from north of Durham, a little town in Roxborough. And the wife is from Shalom, so as I tell people, I'm trying to be a native. Lived in Brunswick County about 27 years, so I'm trying to become a native. Just a few things before we get into the booklet here. I told Josie I thought this was probably run about an hour, 15 minutes or so. And I've got a couple of requests, well, a couple of things. One, I like for these to be kind of question and answer and Q&A discussion for two reasons. One, I can't talk that long, and two, you don't want to hear me talk that long, but I hope we can kind of be done by about 7:15 or 8:15 or thereabouts. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. What I'd like to do is, I do recognize the members and faces from last year, is have you quickly go around the room and introduce yourselves. I know that Brian and Gail are new, but Brian, you're a builder, home builder. Gail, what do you do? What's your profession?
I'm a DSS attorney.
Okay. So you had to sit through all this lawyer talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know much about zoning law.
Okay.
And I'm not here in a legal capacity.
Okay, so I hear you.
You
have a county?
I do.
Okay.
And I apologize in advance for having my phone on, and if it goes off, I have to answer it.
Yeah.
Because I'm on.
Well,
one of
our previous jobs was with Brunswick County Planning Department, so I know a little bit about what DSS is all about. So you got my sympathy, baby. And you, sir, are...
My name is Tony Garibay.
Okay. Were you here last year?
I was.
Okay. What kind of work are you in, or did you do? Or?
I work for Train, which is a parent company, Ingersoll Rand.
Okay.
And I'm I do a lot of our business and project development within the large major projects through the organization. And I'm a licensed mechanical refrigeration general contractor in multiple states.
Oh, okay, good. And you're Dolores, I guess.
Right.
And what do you work or retired or sort of?
I'm a retired executive for 35 years with Marriott Corporation. Okay. Out of headquarters. I now own a small real estate company.
Okay, good. Peter, are you retired or working or what are you?
No, I have district property management, and I run during tax season. I run a tax office.
Okay. Okay. Good. And you are?
I'm Harry Humphreys.
Okay.
I'm the chief of detectives for the Carolina Beach Police Department.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good.
And if my phone goes off, I do them on call.
I understand. I have the. I left my phone in the car, but I certainly understand and appreciate that. Well, for those of you that were here last year, including Betsy, I have to tell you, I don't have any new jokes or stories, so you have to sit through all the same old stuff. But I should mention that based on the discussion that you all had about lawyers and what the comment that Gail made, I don't purport, pretend, or I'm not a lawyer. Don't try to get into too much legal kind of thing. So don't get the impression I'm trying to give you expert legal advice. I will tell you what I think lawyers said. And you notice how I used the word what I think they said. But we'll get into a couple case studies here at the end that are written by lawyers. And Harry, one of your comments will fit in very nicely to what we'll talk about. So we work real well as a team. This booklet is fairly similar to what y'all did last year. If you turn to the table of contents, or to the outline, I guess, on the second page, really want to do three things. One, go through the general statutes. Two, look at the town board adjustment ordinance. The town ordinance that sets up the board of adjustments. And three, look at several case studies, two of which are from the School of Government at the University of North Carolina, and three that I just sort of made up. And Gail, where did you go to law school?
Ohio State.
Did you? Okay, so you don't hold up North Carolina, so that's fine. So anyway, let's look at the North Carolina General Statutes. And those of you that were here last year, you can't answer this question, but has anybody in here actually read anything in Chapter 168? Okay. You have?
I looked it up.
Okay, well, there you go. Good for you. Chapter 168 is the state law that establishes, or 168 is a state law, the body of state law that gives municipalities the right to do what they do. And it covers a whole lot of different things. As Gail would probably confess to, it's a real long chapter. They've got all kinds of things in there, from annexation, how to handle finances, police, fire, planning board, board of adjustments. And what I did on page one is just, page one, two, and three, it's just copied the section that really deals with what you all are about. And the reason I give you this is that not to give you bedside reading, but to help you understand that what this body, what the Board of Adjustment does, is by permission and direction of the general statutes that are passed by the General Assembly, and in some cases signed into law by the governor. It's just like Henry with, you know, they have state laws dealing with law enforcement and all that kind of stuff. Gail has a whole body of state law that she has to deal with, dealing with DSS. That's probably, who knows how long it is, but Chapter 168, Section 388, talks about boards of adjustment. And frankly, during your month-to-month deliberations, it would be rare that you refer back to this. Very rare, actually. But I do want to touch on a few things that I highlighted that I think are important for you to understand. And I'm really, I guess, talking more so to Gail and Bryant than the rest of you. The rest of you, this will be some kind of a reminder or a refresher. But as I say, I'm not going to read through all this. You can read yourself, and we're not going to take that time to do that. But looking on page one, at the end of the first paragraph there, for a city may designate, in this case, when they say city, they mean city or town, may designate a planning board or governing board to perform, you know, the duties of the Board of Adjustment and so forth. All that says is that in many cases, or some cases, the town council could act as the Board of Adjustment. In some cases, the planning board does. In your case, obviously, they've got a separate Board of Adjustment. And there are pluses and minuses to doing it in any different way. I've seen it done all kinds of different ways. I was somewhere not too long ago talking with somebody, I can't remember who it was now, was saying that they were going to take the Board of Adjustment, going to abolish the Board of Adjustment, and the elected board was going to take it back. And not too long ago, a couple years ago, the town of Chadford, the town council was the Board of Adjustment, and they decided they really didn't want to deal with that stuff, so they turned the Board of Adjustment over to the planning board. So it's done in all kinds of different ways. There's no really one way that's right. There are obviously some pluses and minuses to it, but I just tell you that to let you know that there are different ways to skin that cat. I'm not sure how Carolina Beach does it, but you'll find a variety of different ways that it's done.
They have a Board of Adjustment.
Good, okay, good. Looking down at B.
Just before we go, it's an issue we've been discussing. It says, which right at the beginning there, each to be appointed for 3 years, and that seems to be absolute the way we read it.
Well,
the reason it came up is that the council wants to get common terms for all the committees, and we kind of us in the planning board, I think, we stood out from that and said, no, look, we've got North Carolina statute which says it must be for 3 years.
Well, when the word shall or must are in there, that doesn't give you any wiggle room.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, shall and must are fairly clear. When they say you may, I mean you may or you may not, but shall is pretty clear. And usually, or typically, what will happen is that the terms are staggered so that one or two people are up for reappointment every year. rather than everybody coming up at one time. That's usually the way it's done. Anyway, down to paragraph B, shall hear, decide, appeal from a review, an order, requirement, or decision, or determination made by an administrative officer charged with enforcement of the works. I think that's what y'all were talking about earlier, is that y'all are really an appeal vehicle or appeal route where a resident doesn't agree with the, with, for example, in this case, the building inspector's decision. For example, just, and this is just a hypothetical case, say the building inspector says you can't have a tattoo parlor in the C1 or D1 zone, and the tattoo parlor applicant says, well, I think you can. So his the applicant's appeal would be to, in this case, to the Lord Justice for your interpretation of what the ordinance says. Now, that's a real simple kind of thing. And generally, rarely do appeals of this nature get to the planning board, to the Board of Adjustment, but it can happen. Another one might be, and this comes up sometimes in beach towns, determining the height of a building. And I don't know whether you've ever run into this or anybody involved in the building, is that, you know, how do you measure the height of a building? Is it from the average of the line elevation, or is it from the front and back of the chimney? And the applicant might say, well, I think this is what it is, and the inspector says, no, it's this, and that's another thing that might come to y'all for interpretation. And there's some other possibilities, too, so... That's one thing that might come to mind. Let's flip over to page 2 and slow down if I'm going too fast. Paragraph C, the zoning ordinance may provide that the Board of Adjustment may permit special exceptions. Do y'all do that here, or is that done by the planning board? Conditional use permits, they come through y'all?
No,
they don't. Okay. Well, again, this is just something for your information, and generally in most cases they don't. Generally, conditional use permits or special exceptions go through the planning board. So you don't really need to remember this since you don't deal with them. But that's one possibility. Down in the third line, talks about not including variances in permitted uses and. Again, for Gail, you, and Brian. Now, in fact, state law was clarified on this not too long ago. As you, due to a court case a good number of years ago, the Board of Adjustment cannot grant a variance on a permitted use. In other words, I've got a piece of property that's zoned R1 or R6 or whatever it is. I will apply for a variance to put a convenience store in it, or a doctor's office, or real estate office, or surveyor's office, or heat and air office. You cannot apply for use variance. That's can't be done. And you might get some requests for that, but the state law does not allow that. And finally, down at C, the ordinance, and this may have come up, and I happen to occasionally. Your ordinance might say that will also authorize the Board of Adjustment to interpret zoning maps and pass upon disputed questions on lot lines and so forth. And occasionally, this is a little bit like what I was talking about, the interpretation thing earlier. There might be some confusion or some debate over where the zoning line ended, or was this property, all this property zoned a certain way or not, and that's sometimes zoning maps might be subject to interpretation, so that's another thing you can do, but it doesn't come up real often. So, okay, finally, paragraph D, and this is really getting at the meat of what you guys are about. with practical difficulties and unnecessary hardships would result from the carrying out of the strict letter of the zoning ordinance, the Board of Adjustment shall have the power to vary or modify any of the regulations or provisions of the ordinance, so that the spirit of the ordinance shall be preserved, public safety and welfare secured, and substantial justice be done. No change of permitted use may be authorized by various appropriate conditions, which must be reasonably related to the conditions or circumstances that give rise to the need for variance, may be imposed or any approval, on any approval issued by the board. That's a lot of verbiage there, and I guess the real crux of that, and we'll get into this in a little bit, is practical difficulties and unnecessary hardships. There's a whole case study on that we'll get into here in a little bit. But what is an unnecessary hardship? Anybody want to offer?
Yeah, there's a lake in the middle of the property, so he can't build it on top of the lake. He's got to move it closer to the property line than necessary.
That's a good example. That's a real good example. And it's not of his doing. The lake was there before he bought the property, years he bought the property, yeah. In fact, that kind of ties in with one of my little studies here a little bit. He and I are working pretty good together on the notes, but you had a comment or thought?
Yeah, is that similar to... I was here, but I didn't get involved. When Nathan Sanders took that business district area and turned it into residential, is that similar to this, or?
Not for hardship, no.
That's what he presented, from my understanding.
When did he do this? I don't remember.
He did this in 2006.
Okay.
I was on a board in 2006. It turned into a hardship.
It did.
I'm just curious if that's an example of what might have taken place.
Explain what he was.
I don't know where it applied to us. We, I just know that he bought
the dock side.
Yeah, the hotel, and it was a commercial hotel, and he turned it into residential. Now, but everybody was doing that back then.
Yeah,
and I don't know that the town of Kerry Beach had anything in place that said that you could not build residential in the commercial district.
No, I don't believe that even came before the board. If I'm not
well, the zoning would.
Zoning allowed.
He probably had to get.
I just want to know.
No, because he built duplex. He cut all he did is he cut the whole property into five different lots and he put a duplex on each one.
No, that would not be an example of a hardship. A hardship goes with the land. That means that you cannot use the land effectively without variance, without moving something.
Like a better term that would relate to our town, the concrete left over from the bromide plant. Would that be considered a hardship?
Where is this?
Over in Seawatch, they just tore out.
Oh, along the coast here?
Yeah, I mean, would that be considered? Because say they got there and there was a big chunk of concrete underneath it and they needed to shift their house a foot to the north or the south to get past it, would that be considered a hardship?
I'm not familiar with that, but if it's an unreasonable, if it presents a necessary hardship to move it, it could be.
From what I understand, go ahead.
I'm sorry. From my understanding, that pink house that's just went sold, they tried to get a variance on it initially.
And they didn't.
And they couldn't get it. They had to conform or build their house.
To conform with what was
in fit around that concrete.
Okay. I just know that's one issue that's been around this town for a year or two now. Thought maybe.
Okay. Another word in here that sometimes gets a lot of attention is the third from the last line, appropriate conditions which may be reasonably related. What is reasonable? What is reasonable?
That's left to interpretation.
That's
depends on who you are and what you are.
It's one of those words, I think, like common sense, or phrases like common sense. I actually went to the Webster, handy-dandy Merriam-Webster Dictionary, look up reasonable, and everybody in here knows what's reasonable, but we probably have, what, eight different definitions of reasonable. What Harry thinks reasonable or Gail thinks reasonable might be different than what I think is reasonable. We might have three different definitions. But let me read you, and we can all think of really good examples. Let me read you a definition of reasonable. Being in accordance with reason, are not extreme or excessive, in moderation or fair. Well, those are kind of judgments, or as I believe you said, in mind of the holder. So it's a little bit of a slippery term to get your hands around, but I said the language. You know, I love the English language. I know Gail probably deals with this as much as anybody, and we all do. My wife was in journalism for many, many years, and you know, English is a beautiful language, but it's got you know, I know you learned this coming to America. Words mean different things to different people, so it can be pretty tricky sometimes. So I just point out, reasonable sometimes can be a tricky thing to get your hands around. So, okay, does that make any sense?
Well, I think the way it's stated, there has to be some correlation to the. Can't be two opposite topics to make it reasonable. I mean, there has to be some link to why you want to do something.
And you know, if you had a real case in front of you, I think by the testimony and the discussion, you would get a better handle of what is reasonable given those set of circumstances. Looking at section E, the concurring vote, this is sometimes over, the concurring vote of 4/5 of the members of the board shall be necessary to reverse any order, requirement, decision, determination by any administrative officer charged with enforcement of this order. So what that says is that the building inspector has a, make something to y'all, or in this case, an applicant does, or a resident, you have to have a 4/5 vote to overturn his decision. It's still a simple majority. So finally, when I find it next to last on E1, this is something that's fairly new. May have talked about this last year. A member of the board or any other body exercising quasi-judicial functions pursuant to this article, so we're shown not to speak in the vote or any quasi-judicial matter, in a matter that would violate the effective person's constitutional rights to partial decision making. That's a mouthful, talking about conflict of interest. If you, as it goes on to read there, if your brother, spouse, business partner, nephew is before you, you probably don't need to be involved in that case. Sometimes that's a little hard to avoid in small towns, but you should excuse yourself from calling an alternate in. Now, if, by the same token, if BP or Exxon is applying for a variance for a convenience store down the corner, and you've got 2 shares of BP or Exxon stock in your 10,000 shares of mutual funds, that's probably not a big deal.
But if you own the property?
Well, if you own the property,
that's a big deal.
That's a big deal.
Yeah, that is a big deal. But you would want to, I think if it's in doubt, whether it's a conflict of interest, you need to excuse yourself, or at least at a minimum, make it known to the chair that you, so-and-so, your sister, husband, neighbor, or best friend, or whatever is involved in it, because perception can be everything in this thing. I think you need to be very careful about that.
Yeah, we've had situations where people have excused themselves, and mostly it happens that you know, members of the board realize the situation is set aside. It usually isn't.
Usually
they want to. An issue is hearing, because he never gets there.
Yeah. And finally, and I think you were talking about this earlier, every decision y'all made is subject to review by Superior Court. Rarely will a case be appealed to Superior Court, but it does happen occasionally, and they've got 30 days to do it.
So we've had decisions that have been appealed to the Superior Court. One was thrown out, and the other one was upheld. I mean, so far we're batting about a 99 in that ballpark. So
well, that's good. That's good. And the court will rule generally on whether he followed the correct procedure. Now, that's why it's important to follow the correct procedure, because the court will review the minutes and so forth. So that's really what's important there. So that's the Board of Adjustment section of Chapter 168. It's a useful thing to be aware of. You probably will rarely refer to it. Let's turn to, this is from the town's Board of Adjustment